Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Good morning to you. Sherry Brownrigg in for Teresa Tomeo, who is on pilgrimage right now. Follow her on social media. Keep abreast of all the great things that is happening on that pilgrimage. And it's Friday. Hey, coming up on the show today, EWTN's Doug Keck with the Inside Word. He'll be here. We'll find out what's happening there at the network. And Steve Ray also joins us from a pilgrimage somewhere in France. Apparently he's on the road, so we'll see if we can catch up with him. And also we will talk this hour to Dr. Dan Guernsey about a new online course from Ave Maria. It focuses on the pursuit of wisdom. Doesn't that sound interesting? Not knowledge, but wisdom. Well, you might be hearing in my voice a bit of a nose mitten effect. Yes, I have COVID this week, so you can't catch it from me over the radio, I promise. But it was kind of funny because I didn't realize I had it until probably, what's today, Friday, probably until late Wednesday. And it started last Thursday when I was on the show. I had a little bit of a runny nose and blah, blah, blah. And you know, when you get a cold or the flu, it has a certain course and just wasn't getting better. I was really feeling bad the entire week and very tired and my head was full. And I was at work and someone said to me, "Oh, your lunch smells good." And I realized I couldn't smell my lunch at all. I couldn't even taste my lunch. So I looked up, okay, what are the symptoms for the current strain? And yes, of course, it is a hallmark of the current strain that's out there in the U.S. is no taste or no smell. So COVID it is, yes. Anyway, I didn't realize. Had fun reading about Pope Leo's comments on the first saints who were a married couple, the parents of Saint Therese, you know them, Saints Louis and Zélie Martine. It's so beautiful. You know, when you're married, as I am, and probably many of you listening are married, it's sometimes wonderful, sometimes so full of joy. Sometimes it can be a real uphill climb. I know in my own marriage, I guess we fall under the category of unequally yoked. My husband has fallen away from the church. That happened quite a while ago. I think maybe around 2017. And you might guess why. It's because of the abuse scandal. He's a psychotherapist and counseled some victims of priest abuse. And the priests in those cases, this was before we really knew what the best treatment was for this and how to handle it. And those priests were simply moved around. And that was really, really angered him. But you know, I pray every day to the Blessed Mother, and she lets me know that indeed he will be back before his time comes, before Jesus calls him home. So I am very, very, counting on that. Let's put it that way. I'm counting on that. And I know that Mary never lies. Jesus never lies. So if that is what I have been told, then that is what will happen. And so I'm so looking forward to that and counting on it. But I pray for him every day, and I ask that you pray for him and all those who have fallen away. And also, today's the feast of St. Anthony Mary Claret. He was a Spanish priest born in Catalonia, and he was so interesting. He has a lot of miraculous things that would happen around him. He was an exceptional preacher. And witnesses said that his body would become transfigured while he was preaching or in prayer, and sometimes he would levitate up to 6 feet off the ground in front of a lot of credible witnesses. He was said to have stopped a series of earthquakes in Cuba when he was the bishop there by kneeling on the ground and placing his palms to the earth while uttering prayers. He could calm terrible storms by raising a hand to the sky and blessing the storm clouds. And there was apparently a supernatural light that radiated from his body while he was saying Mass. And it was even seen by Queen Isabella of Spain. And she produced a written statement solemnly declaring that she had personally witnessed this phenomenon. And that's amazing. He was very prophetic as well. And he said that Jesus told him that there were three great evils. This was in 1859. That were descending upon mankind. The first was a series of enormous, horrifying wars. The second, the four powerful demons of pleasure, love of money, false reasoning, and a will separated from God. Boy, we've certainly seen that. And Jesus told Clara that the third chastisement would be brought about by communism. That was, at the time, 1859, a very fledgling movement that only had hundreds of followers. So he was incredibly, incredibly prophetic. But today's the feast of St. Anthony, Mary Claret, and we ask for his intercession. And it's about 5 minutes past the hour and time for news. President Trump says he is cutting off trade negotiations with Canada. NBC's Alice Barr reports it's over an ad campaign that includes a clip of former President Ronald Reagan warning about the long-term risks of tariffs.
The president citing a statement from the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute accusing Ontario of using selective audio and video that misrepresents the 1987 address without asking permission to use and edit the remarks, noting the foundation is reviewing legal options.
Ontario Premier Doug Ford announced the ad campaign earlier this month. Trump said on Truth Social that tariffs are very important to the national security and economy of the U.S., accusing Canada of using the ad to interfere with a pending Supreme Court case regarding Trump's authority to impose sweeping tariffs. In August, Trump announced a 35% tariff on all Canadian goods, with some exempt because of a previous trade agreement. The Trump administration is turning up the pressure on Moscow to agree to a ceasefire with Ukraine, Charlotte North reports.
The U.S. has sanctioned Russia's two biggest oil companies, Rosneft and Lukoil, that help fund the Kremlin's war against Ukraine. This is the first direct intervention from the Trump administration against Russia over its invasion and follows a series of sudden shifts in U.S. policy over the past week that have kept everybody guessing.
President Trump has previously signaled he could impose penalties on Moscow for its continuation of the war, and in remarks from the Oval Office, he explained that he felt it was time to issue the sanctions. The United Kingdom also targeted the two oil companies last week, and the European Union has formally adopted another package of sanctions. North reports President Trump has been losing patience with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
After a phone call with Putin last week, peace talks in Budapest were on, then abruptly cancelled a few days later. The U.S. leader had a testy meeting with Ukrainian President Zelensky and refused to give Ukraine long-range missiles, instead suggesting Ukraine give up large amounts of territory to Russia.
North reports the sanctions come as Trump pushes for an end to the war in Ukraine.
President Trump may have finally gotten fed up with both leaders and is now playing hardball to pressure them to agree to peace.
History was made in the Sistine Chapel on Thursday as Pope Leo XIV and King Charles III prayed side by side, marking the first time since the Protestant Reformation that a reigning British monarch and a pope have prayed together during a royal state visit to the Vatican.
President Trump may have finally gotten fed up with both leaders and is now playing hardball to pressure them to agree to peace.
Buckingham Palace said that the king's state visit postponed earlier this year due to the poor health of Pope Francis, celebrates both the Church's 2025 Jubilee year and the ecumenical work between the Church of England and the Catholic Church, reflecting the Jubilee year's theme of walking together as pilgrims of hope. A prominent Free Presbyterian minister from Northern Ireland, however, is not so happy with the visit and the prayers. Reverend Kyle Paisley, the son of firebrand Democratic Unionist Party founder Ian Paisley, said after the king prayed with Pope Leo XIV in the Sistine Chapel that King Charles III has acted contrary to the oath made at his coronation and should now let someone else take his place, who is a true Protestant and who will take their vows seriously. At least half of U.S. states plan to cut off food assistance benefits on November 1st because of the government shutdown. In Pitt County, North Carolina, Economic Support Services Administrator Thomas Knight says officials are working with community groups to try to bridge the gap.
We're not saying that we can match what they currently receive, but we are trying to come up with a plan to make sure that households are not going without food.
Some 25 states are sending out notices to people on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, that the checks won't be coming next month, including California, Alabama, Arkansas, Hawaii, Indiana, Massachusetts, Mississippi, and New Jersey. In North Carolina, De'Asia Hawkins, who uses SNAP benefits, says she's concerned about how some people might react if they lose their food assistance.
People are going to result into violence and also stealing, because how are they going to survive with feeding their families?
A new analysis reveals that the number of young people identifying as transgender or non-binary has plunged in recent years. The findings suggest the rate among 18 to 22-year-olds has dropped by almost half from 2023 to 2024. The number of young adults identifying as non-binary saw a similar drop in just 1 year, going from roughly 5% to about 2%. While there is no single explanation for the shift, some believe that social and political factors could be at play, including a decline in acceptance. But individuals who have detransitioned told the Daily Mail, who reported on the study, that the new downward trends reflect a broader phenomenon. It's a social contagion, and we can see that reflected in the data, says Prisha Mosley, who was born female. Mosley said high school trends have an uptick and a downtick according to what's in fashion. The only difference with this trend, she said, is that medical professionals get involved to make it permanent. Mosley, who began her transition to become male as a teen behind her parents' back and underwent a double mastectomy at 18 years old, said social media also plays a role in encouraging people to change their gender identities. After the Palisades Fire suspect pleaded not guilty on Thursday, his defense team said he's simply a scapegoat. Mark Mayfield has more.
Outside a federal court in Los Angeles, a lawyer for Jonathan Rinderknecht said his client is not even accused of setting the Palisades fire. Steve Haney said the Florida man is accused of setting a different fire a week earlier that later became the Palisades fire. Haney believes that even if his client started the earlier fire, it was the L.A. Fire Department who failed to fully extinguish the embers. Investigators believe that that New Year's Day fire smoldered underground until it erupted as the Palisades fire on January 7th. I'm Mark Mayfield.
And in sports, news of a gambling ring has rocked the NBA. Portland Trailblazers head coach and Basketball Hall of Famer Chauncey Billups, Miami Heat guard Terry Rozier, and former NBA journeyman Damon Jones are among 34 people indicted in connection with two separate federal gambling investigations announced by the Eastern District of New York Thursday. Billups, the Portland head coach since 2021, is charged in an elaborate scheme in which marks were lured to participate in rigged poker games, in part with the opportunity to play alongside the NBA five-time All-Star, as well as Jones. And baristas at Starbucks may soon be going on strike, with a vote set to begin Friday, Michael Kastner reports.
Starbucks Workers United says a strike authorization vote will remain open for several days. The union says it's also planning a series of rallies and pickets over the weekend outside Starbucks locations in dozens of U.S. cities. Workers for the coffee chain are demanding more hours and higher take-home pay. Starbucks says it tried to negotiate with the union, but claims it only represents about 4% of the workforce and yet still chose to walk away from the bargaining table. Company said if they're ready to come back, we're ready to talk. I'm Michael Kastner.
And we will be back with Doug Keck, the Inside Word at EWTN on Catholic Connection. Stay with us. Welcome back to Catholic Connection. About 15 minutes past the hour, I'm Sherry Brownrigg in for Teresa Tomeo. Doug Keck is with us, of course, the Inside Word at EWTN. And Doug, it's really so much fun. I get to talk to you maybe like twice a year. And so this is great.
And you sound exactly the same. You always sound terrific.
Even with COVID and my nose full and my head full?
I think it sounds terrific.
Okay. All right. Well, I will just send that compliment up to God, because he's the one who's making it sound okay. In my head, I sound like an echo chamber. So
right. No, I know. I understand.
So lots of great things are happening. I mean, here we are, you know, at the end of October, we're getting into All Saints Day, All Souls Day, and the holidays. Right. And if I know EWTN, you already have the holiday schedule all sewn up. But there's there's probably some things happening a little closer to today.
Right. Well, as you know, I mean, you do programming months and months ahead.
Oh, you have to.
So,
yeah.
And I've always said the church gives it this wonderful, schedule that's the same every year that you can basically program against, along with the new things that happen. But it makes it easy in many ways to plan some great programming. So we've got a program today that's airing called Slaves and Kings, St. Anthony Mary Claret. Inspiring story of a Spanish missionary. In his role as Archbishop of Santiago, he preached against slavery, risking death at the hands of corrupt Cuban authorities. And that is today at 3:30 p.m. And this is the feast day of St. Anthony Claret. So, again, our programming guys are all over it. We've also got a program on Wales, The Golden Thread of Faith, which actually talks about the Roman occupation and the rise of the Catholic Church in Wales. And that's going to be airing tomorrow at 2 p.m. And, of course, in Wales, the Catholic Church recognizes the date of October the 25th as the Feast of the Six Welsh Martyrs and Their Companions. You know, we've got Catholic martyrs everywhere.
Yeah.
And more of them happening, unfortunately, that don't get talked about in the 21st century. We also have a program about Polycarp, early church father, and that's airing tomorrow night at 8 p.m. And, again, someone who reflects the Catholic Church in its earliest time. We're moving ahead. We've got Life on the Rock happening on Sunday. And Gabriel Castillo joins Father Mark to talk about the power of the rosary. And I think we've seen it more and more. And more people are catching on to the fact that praying the rosary is even more important than maybe we've treated it over the last 30 or 40 years. We've got My Lord's Faith Journey, sharing the message of Lourdes, talking about healings. That's happening on Sunday night at 11:30 p.m. We've got Cor ad Lacor, Loquitor, almost terrible at these pronunciations, and the examination of St. Philip Neri's influence on the work of St. John Henry Newman. You always hear about that in relation to Newman, and also because of the fact that Bishop Sheen used to use that heart-to-heart phrase as well. Our Hidden Gems airing next week. We've got on the 28th, which is Tuesday, we've got one of our hidden gems is the Catholic Shrine in America is the National Shrine of St. Jude, okay, and that's in Chicago. So, again, these kinds
that.
Of, yeah, see, that's why it's a hidden gem. And we've got St. John of the Cross, the Great Exchange, a program airing about St. John of the Cross on the 30th, that's Wednesday, and also a program on the same day airing that afternoon is A Grave in Perm, the Father Walter Chizik story, and of course is a powerful story about a Catholic priest who survived and thrived in Russia under the oppression of the Soviets, and that's airing next week, next Wednesday. And that just is really scratching the surface of all the great programming. If you really want to stay up to date, besides listening to this, you can go to our EWTN.com and find out all the great programming that's coming up. And also, don't forget about our on-demand platform and YouTube channel, where you can see so many of these programs and get them on demand. And our, of course, from an audio side on our Podcast Central, on our radio side with wonderful audio podcasts, so we've got it covered everywhere. EWTN is everywhere and in every format, and expanding our on-demand platform, so look for that.
Yeah, EWTN is on the cutting edge of reaching people, and it's just absolutely phenomenal. And I love how many programs that you have about the saints. You know, St. John Paul II said, don't be afraid to be saints. And I think there's still that tendency for even those of us who are would call ourselves devout Catholics is to think, oh, you know, saints, yeah, those they were great. They're my friends. I love them. But ourselves?
Right, and I think that's why there's been an attempt, certainly, I think, with John Paul II on to kind of bring forward more modern saints, to not make it seem like, you know, this is just something somebody could do historically in the past by living some sort of perfect life, as mother would used to say, the saint where the butter would melt in their mouth and the sugar, you know, that kind of whole thing, you know, the wax figure, you know.
Sure.
That's not what saints are. That's not who mother always talked to people about, living a saintly life and in your own situation. As we know, saints were people with failings, maybe sometimes incredible failings, who overcame them with the grace of God to live an exemplary life as an example for us to say it's not perfect people who are saints. It's imperfect people who strive for perfection who become saints and show us that no matter where we are, there's always an opportunity to change. I mean, Bartolo Longo was a Satanist and he was just, raised up. So, I mean, this is the kind of thing as anyone who thinks, you know, I'm so far gone or my situation so bad that I can't be forgiven, I can't turn things around, that's just untrue. It doesn't mean God, of course, loves you just the way you are, but it doesn't mean you continue in sin and say, well, he just loves me the way I am. He loves you so much that he wants to change your lifestyle. He wants to show you the way out of where you are.
And the goal is to spend eternity with him. That
Absolutely.
Should always be our goal. Yeah, and with St. Carlo Acutis, you know, that's mm-hmm. another great example. Here's a young man who had all the pressures that kids have today. I mean, mm-hmm. A few years ago, but they're many of the same.
Right.
And he still managed to, his entire life, he lived it for God. And,
right.
you know, by all accounts, he was a popular kid. Kids liked him. They may have thought that he was different, but he was a very likable person, and he just wasn't afraid to tell people what he believed. And, you know, he made such a huge
right.
difference in the world when he was alive, and now in his death and his sainthood. I mean, it's just phenomenal.
Right. But it's interesting, too, because all the cutting edge, you know, the computers and everything, what was his main focus?
The Eucharist.
The yeah. Eucharist, Eucharistic miracles, you know, those kinds of things, you know, that sometimes I think, thanks to him, I think, are starting to be focused on again and for people to focus on the Eucharist. Because where we see Eucharistic adoration, where we see a reverence for the Eucharist, and that's where we see vocations thrive. That's where we see the healthiest parts of the church. You know, and it's out of that health that we can do the other things that we're called to do, helping the poor and welcoming the stranger and these other things that we're supposed to live out in our lives. But if we put those things in front, you know, and get things out of order, we just become burnt out social workers. We just get caught up in the material changes in people's lives without paying attention to, as our Lord said, don't worry about the things that destroy the body. Worry about the things that destroy the soul.
Yes, absolutely. And I remember that it was the last... I think it would be an apostolic exhortation for the last Communication Day, World Communication Day, that John Paul II was alive. He wrote with so many exclamation points about do not be afraid to use the modern ways of media to reach people. That's what St. Carlo Acutis did, and that's exactly what EWTN is doing.
Well, that's what Mother Angelica, that nun from Canton, Ohio, did as well, and said, you've got to be there. The enemy is already there. We have to be on the plains there, fighting the good fight as well. And we also have to be people who are willing to stand up for our faith and realize that people respect people who stand up for what they believe.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Doug Keck, always a pleasure to talk with you. And
likewise.
Blessings to you and to the network here at EWTN, all the great work. That's Inside Word at EWTN with Doug Keck. Coming up next, we'll see if we can find Steve Ray on pilgrimage in France. Stay with us. Welcome back to Catholic Connection. Sherry Brownrigg in for Teresa Tamio, but she will be back on Monday. And Steve Ray is with us. Steve, an amazing evangelist. He and his wife Janet have taken thousands of people on pilgrimages, and it's so fun to find out what they're doing. We'll do that in a minute. But Steve is the author of many books. He created the Footsteps of God video stories, and he is on pilgrimage right now. Steve, where are you in the world?
Well, we're on our Saints and Shrines of France trip. We're in our third day, and if I'm huffing and puffing, it's because we're about halfway up the 350 steps to get to the top of San Michel. Well, it's actually Le Mont Saint Michel. It's the Mountain of Saint Michael, and it's out in the Atlantic Ocean. A lot of the time during the year, surrounded by water, we have to take a tram over here, but this was built 1,000 years ago, started, or even more, and it's absolutely magnificent.
So clearly you're there in low tide, right?
Yeah, it was low tide, but it was rushing out when we came up here.
Oh, wow.
So it was really moving. It can move a kilometer or two a minute sometimes. So the tide is pretty dangerous.
Well, I have to say, you must be in pretty good shape to be able to talk on the radio and climb those stairs at the same time.
I think we just hit step 200.
Oh, my.
And there's a little plateau here. So, and not only that, Sherry, but I had my knees replaced, you know, so 2 years ago. But they're doing pretty good.
Wow. God provides, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're here in France, and we're going up this. This was made by monks way back in the St. Michael came and told a bishop to build a church here. And there was a huge outcropping of rock off of the coast on the Atlantic. And now you hear the bells ringing. And so they did. They built this. And you have to be here to appreciate it, how massive it is. And it's built out in the water. And it's built on a rock. And how in the world, even with modern technology and hydraulics, this would be a major project. It would just be almost insurmountable. But how they did it back then, when it was just manpower and ropes and riggings, is quite astounding.
Well,
it's all for the glory of God. They did it for the glory of God.
All for the glory of God. And one of the other things that it's famous for, I've already mentioned that, is that it's accessible only at certain times on the bridge that goes between the mainland and this island. It's accessible only certain parts of the day because that road is often covered with water.
Well, in most times of the year, when there's not a huge tide, it can go back and forth. But on the several times a year, they said when it's the real high tides, like at the spring and winter equinox, I think they said, that the water actually comes up into the first steps and the first road layer of the whole cathedral up here. But it's all restaurants and hotels and things down below. But then now we're going up into the church. We had mass in a little church called St. Peter's. Once you go up a few steps, we had our own mass there. It was very nice. I feel like you're stepping back into medieval times. And we got a great priest with us, Father Conlon. He's Irish. And he's just a magnificent priest. Having him along. And is there the wind, or are you okay?
Yeah, we can still hear you.
Okay, good, because we're now looking. We're about two-thirds of the way to the top, looking out over the ocean, but the tide is out right now, so you could see groups with guides leading them out there. It's dangerous, both because if the tide does move, it can catch you, because it can travel a kilometer or so in a few minutes. And we saw it going out. It was, you wouldn't want to be caught in it. And there's also quicksand, sand moving, and sometimes it gets to be foggy and people get lost. So, but it's how they built it, I have no idea. But anyway, just to give you an overview, we started the trip in, we flew into Paris, and then we drove 2 hours out to Le Zoo, and I'm sure everybody knows where that is.
Yeah.
And we went to the relics of St. Therese, and people said, well, wait a minute. I heard that the relics were traveling around the United States, and we came all the way over here to miss them? And I told them, no. I said, when they send the relics out, and I wrote up a little document, I'm giving them handouts every day, and so that they get information and all this along with what we're learning from the guides. But the relics are just small fragments and pieces. The majority of her relics always stay in Lazoo, and that's where we were able to venerate those, and also her parents, and that was pretty, Zelie and Luis, and that was pretty special too. And had mass at her tomb. That was all. It's very special there. People here had a great devotion to Saint Therese, and so we got to go through her childhood home where she lived until she went into the monastery. And so we could see the furniture and all the clothes and her pictures of her family, and it was very, people were very moved by that. And then yesterday, Sherry, we went, because we're up in Normandy, we couldn't not go. We spent a day visiting D-Day in Normandy and walking on Omaha Beach. And the Lord has been really with us, because it was told that it was going to be such bad weather that the Omaha Beach would be closed because of the dangerous winds, and that it would be pouring rain. Well, it rained a little bit, but it only rained when we were on the bus or in the building for lunch. As soon as we stepped out, the sun came out and it stopped raining. It was almost as though God flipped a switch on and off for us.
Yeah, praise
God.
So
we were able to go to the monument there with all of this over 9,000 crosses. And some of them are Stars of David, too, for the Jewish men and women who died in the war. But to walk among 9,000 white crosses of young men who gave their lives to keep freedom in the world and to destroy the Nazis and that whole horrible regime that wanted to take over the world, at least Europe. And you see their names on there. And some of them say, name unknown, known only to God.
Oh, my.
And when you think of this, a majority of those young men came from, say, Nebraska on the farm. And one day they finished baling the hay. They put on a uniform and they get on a plane and fly over here. They put them on a boat and bring them up to the Omaha Beach. And they're told to go up there. The Nazis are there, go kill them. And 4,000 of them died the first day just getting off of those boats, going up into the cliffs there to go after the Nazis. And these young men, 4,000 died in the first day, who gave their lives, who had plans for their life, probably had girlfriends and hopes of getting married and a family. And
yeah.
We're going
sacred
to
ground.
A lot of more places. So I'll let you get a word in edgewise.
I'm just taking it all in, because everywhere you're talking about are just places that are so incredibly sacred to us. And, you know, the opportunity to, for example, at St. Therese's, her house, her tomb, all those things. So many of us are very, very close to her and really, really love her. And, of course, Normandy. I mean, that's amazing. We only have just a very, very short time left, but what's next?
Well, check my website, CatholicConvert.com. We have a sold-out trip going to Israel on December 28th. I put it up, and the bus sold out very rapidly. We're going back to Israel four times next year. We got Lourdes, Fatima, Ireland, our St. Paul cruise. And so join us. We'd love to have people join us at CatholicConvert.com. Keep up the good work, Sherry. You do a great job.
Thank you. I appreciate that. CatholicConvert.com. More to come on Catholic Connection. This is Catholic Connection, Sherry Brownrigg in for Teresa Tamio, who will be back Monday, by the way. But you can follow her on her pilgrimages and exploits around the world on all of her social media, if you like. Really excited about this next interview here. Dr. Dan Guernsey is with us. He is Associate Professor of Education and Director of the Masters of Education in the Catholic Educational Leadership Program at Ave Maria University, and just really doing some great things there. And Dan, welcome to the program. I'm really excited to talk about this, especially in the context of knowledge versus wisdom. So first of all, welcome to Catholic Connection.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. And it's an exciting week for us, too, because I'm also a senior fellow at the Cardinal Newman Society, and we have Cardinal Newman about to be declared the patron of Catholic education. Absolutely amazing. This is going to be in the next couple of days. And then he's going to be made a doctor of the church which puts them like in that one half of 1% of all saints. And there have only been three since the 1800s. So it's a great time to think about Catholic education, about the great saints and holy people that have come before us and how the torch is now in our hands.
And I can't think of a better saint, you know, to help with intercession and all that other than Cardinal Newman. That is absolutely phenomenal. Well, there's a lot that's happening in Catholic education, but and you've dedicated your life to it, which I believe is a real cause of sanctity for you because it's so important. And it has the ability to dramatically change people's lives. So what, first of all, let's start with just Catholic education itself. What makes it distinct and vital to the future of the church?
Well, that's where we involved in Catholic education have to always go back to, because sometimes what happens in education, there's so much to do and we're so busy that we go day by day, you know, doing all the teaching without thinking about that essential question is, what are we doing here? Why are our schools open? And they're not just open to exist. They're not just open for test scores. They're not open because the public schools aren't doing a sufficient job. They're open because the church says this is a uniquely profound way to educate and to sanctify its body, and then also to evangelize out. So it's this twin purpose of sanctification of the student and service to the common good, especially through evangelization, that forms the core of Catholic education. So those of us involved in Catholic education, whether we're in schools, most of our homeschooling families appreciate this, have to start from this core, right? What are we actually doing? Because if we don't know what we're doing, we could just wander lost in the common swamp that is big education nowadays. So we have to really think carefully, not just about what we're doing, but about who we're doing it to. So we also have to think about the nature of man and the nature of the children before. So a great, big, exciting world to walk in, and thank goodness we have the church to anchor ourselves in.
Yeah, it really is an exciting world, and an existentially vital one, too. I mean, here in the U.S., we have so many thriving Catholic schools, and with some of President Trump's policies, you know, it has made it even easier for kids to go to a Catholic school, which is great. But what are your thoughts on the state of Catholic education here in the U.S.?
I am hopeful, as you are. I think, again, this has to be hope, you know, standing in somewhat of a realm of darkness, but it's not as dark as it was back when Catholic schools really started to collapse back in the 70s and 80s that we had our major collapse. So, you know, we're down about 70%, 76% in size and scope of what we used to be back in the heyday back in the 1960s.
Well, just real quick before we go on, what caused that collapse? Yeah.
Massive societal change. Well, I mean, first of all, Catholic schools were originally created in the United States back in the 1800s, about the time that common schooling was becoming the norm. But back then, the public schools were very Protestant, and so they taught the Protestant Bible and taught Protestant religion. And so there was the problem for the Catholics, especially the Irish and the Germans coming over, that they would have to learn a Protestant version of the Ten Commandments or Protestant prayers. And so the Catholics said in the 1800s, 1840s, we need to open up a school in every parish. So that kind of started the need for Catholic education, was because the public schools were too religious. So now you can imagine there's even more need because, you know, God, our society has gotten so irreligious that we have to do something dramatic. So then we hit the heyday back around the 60s, and then there were great cultural changes. Catholics became mainstream back in the early days. You know, in the Revolution, we were only 1.5% of the population when we were founded, and it was only in the 50s and 60s that we became mainstream. John F. Kennedy, et cetera, and then so people thought, and then we kicked religion out of the public schools. So Catholics thought, okay, we're mainstream. Public schools aren't Protestant anymore. We can go there. And then you had the whole Vatican II thing, and we just got decimated with the loss of our religious. And
so it wasn't one thing. It was just sort of like a trend.
It was a lot
of things. Yeah,
but
piling on each other.
How were we coming back? In the 80s, we tried to come back by being excellent in academics and sports, and a lot of, you know, premier Catholic schools are still stuck there. But there's a really growing trend now with the Chesterton Schools and with the ICE Institute for Catholic Liberal Education, and with some really good dioceses that are really starting to get back to this Catholic identity piece. and then move on from there, saying that's where it lands. And interesting stat is that 11% of our 46% of our priests went to Catholic school at some point, and 11% were homeschooled. So very exciting that our new priests coming up are have been exposed to Catholic education and homeschooling, you know, really solid Catholic education, that I think as these priests take leadership in different parishes and ultimately as bishops, that we're going to see this, again, renewed excitement about what we have, right? The depth of the Catholic education tradition goes back, you know, thousands of years. So we've got so much to offer.
Oh, so much, yeah. We're talking with Dr. Dan Guernsey, who is Associate Professor of Education and Director of the Masters of Education, a program in the Catholic Educational Leadership Program at Ave Maria University. So how and why do Catholic educators need to be involved in formation and not just academics?
Wow, yeah. Vatican II, the Vatican Document Education, Gravissimum Educationis, tells us that the mission of Catholic education depends primarily on the teachers. And again, we need to go back to that mission. That mission is one of, you know, individual salvation of the student and service. So our Catholic educators have to know and totally live that mission. There's a famous saying in Catholic education, goes, the students listen more to witnesses than to teachers, right? It's what they see, not just what they hear. So the Catholic educators, we're trying to do this through Cardinal Newman and through Ave Maria and other Cardinal Newman schools, is really get back to this vision of Catholic education that it also involves rich prayer and sacramental life. It involves an intensely lived community life because these schools are ecclesial communities. They are experiences of the church, and we need to treat them as such. And our faculty need to realize that they actually have a munus, a teaching office in the church that they have to be faithful to. And so that's part of the Catholics need to be in community of faithfulness and orthodoxy with the magisterium. And then we also, the other thing we really get in Catholic education is that the student is an integrated whole of mind, body, and spirit. Some schools might just want to educate the mind and say, well, we can't get into the body and spirit, but you know, the Catholic genius is you only come one way. You only come as an embodied spirit, and so you just have to deal with what's in front of you, and then Jesus revealed the fullness of who we are. So having that vision of man, and then the unique thing we do, and this is what we try to do at Ave Maria University and all our Catholic universities, is we bring Christian insight into education. So we bring Christian insight into history and literature and philosophy and math and physics and biology and law and everything else. So it's when we do this is our gift to education, not to be better public schools, not to be a better university than Harvard. We are already better universities than Harvard because we have more full, complete access to the truth, not because we're holy, but because we've been given this gift by God himself so that we can have life and have it abundantly. So it's getting this message out to our educators, to our schools, and I think there is an openness to this right now because the world is so chaotic and so deprived of depth that the hearts and souls of our youth are longing for this, right? They were made for this.
Yeah. It is a true gift to our kids and to us, too. I mean, to those of us who, because we all should be lifelong learners. Now, Ave Maria has a new course that is called The Pursuit of Wisdom, and we'll talk about that and how people can sign up. But so I was so taken by the title, because you don't say The Pursuit of Knowledge, you say The Pursuit of Wisdom. What's the difference?
Again, I would say that wisdom is that integration of knowledge and spirit and truth, you know, which comes fully in the human being fully alive in God and, you know, at harmony and peace with the universe. So that wisdom is something deeper. The knowledge is important. The knowledge is a part of wisdom. The knowledge is that deeper level of understanding that comes. And the idea with these Pursuit of Wisdom courses is that they're free and they're online. And they can last anywhere from 3 to 5 hours. You don't have to do them all at once, but they're nicely divided into little like 15, 20-minute segments. And it gives folks a taste of some of the great stuff we're trying to do here at Ave Maria University. My Pursuit of Wisdom course is called the Foundations and Future of Catholic Education. There are other professors who have done other courses on the family, on politics, on the sacraments. So they're made to be very digestible, very acceptable, and to give you a taste of what our professors are doing here at the university to bring Christian insight into some of the deeper questions. We have courses on C.S. Lewis. We have courses on Tolkien. And so they're all free, and they're all available at pursuitofwisdom.com or, .org. Or they're also, you go to the Ave Maria website, and I think there's even some apps available under the Pursuit of Wisdom. So I highly recommend them. They're fun to watch and a great way to spend some time in the car or while you're cleaning or whatever you do when you listen to podcasts.
I watched the trailer yesterday, and I thought, oh, I have got to take this course, because it really brings the knowledge of so many of the professors there at Ave Maria University to us. I mean, we get to learn from them, and as you mentioned, it's free of charge. It's thepursuitofwisdom.org, and definitely watch the trailer, but you can just head over there and start the courses. And yes, there is, right at the top here, get the app. So let's talk about your course. We only have about a minute here, but yours is, again, called the Foundations and Future of Catholic Education. What are some of the things that people will learn from your course?
Well, we kind of talked a little bit about the future and where Catholic education is going.
Yeah.
The course actually goes deeper into, start off with the foundational premise in Anthony Eslin says, in order to get education right, you have to get man right. So we have to found our educational vision on truth and humanity, you know, in God's revelation and in the community of love. And then we'll talk a little bit about the role of truth, beauty, and goodness in education. We'll talk a little bit about Cardinal Newman and his vision for the unity of all knowledge and the purpose of education to elevate society. And then we get briefly into Dewey and Rousseau and modernism, which is when we get this education becomes very individualized and utilitarian oriented. And then we move even further into the post-modernity, when the meaning of everything just gets bleached out, and then how Catholic education brings that back in. And we talk a little bit about AI too.
Well, that's wonderful.
AI is just another great big thing. So.
Yeah, well, that's Dr. Dan Guernsey. He is with Ave Maria University. You can find these courses at thepursuitofwisdom.org. Dr. Guernsey, thank you so much for being with us on Catholic Connection. And hey, we'll be right back. You're listening to Catholic Connection. Sherry Brownrigg in for Teresa Tamio. She will be back Monday, though, by the way, and she'll have Matt Swaim with her highlights from the journey home. And Bishop Athanasius Schneider will be there in the topic, The Martyrs, and his book on martyrdom, No Greater Love. And, of course, she'll be talking with Gail Buckley Berenger about the scripture verse of the week, because it's Monday, and we always like to start out our week with scripture, don't we? What an incredible show that it has been today. My goodness, just absolutely amazing, so full of just beauty and the truth in our Catholic faith. When I host this show, I'm always reminded about how grateful I am to be Catholic and have all of these things that I can really connect to. And it's amazing, too, that there was a time in my life where I just would pray and pray and pray and say, Lord, I really want to get closer to you. Help me get closer. And, I mean, just real lamenting and begging. And the Lord finally said to me, Sherry, I have given you everything that you need to grow in your faith. And when you think about it, He has given us everything that we need to grow in our faith. We have access to the sacraments. We have teaching just everywhere. We have so many different ways that we can avail ourselves of really good, solid teaching. And that's important, that those two words, good, solid teaching, not just any teaching, but be very discerning about where you go and get that teaching. We have the saints. The saints who can help us, our friends. We have the Blessed Mother. We always have recourse to her. And friends, coming up next, more of the show. I hope you'll stay with us.
Welcome.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Morning to you, Sherry Brown Riggin for Teresa Tomeo, who is still on pilgrimage. And welcome to EWTN Radio Extra. And we have a great hour coming up. We'll talk with Emily Stark, who is editor-in-chief and host of the Natural Womanhood podcast. And we'll talk about Trump's IVF executive order. Now, she's in Ireland, so we're hoping that we'll be able to reach her. And that'll be fun just to hear about that as well. And after the news, there's a good friend of mine who will be on the show, and she'll join me in talking about praying for priests. She and I are vice president and president, respectively, of Maria Regina Clary, which is Mary Queen of the Clergy, and it's an apostolate that encourages prayers for priests and vocations. Now, Vicki's going to tell you the story of how she and a priest founded the apostolate. It's really, really quite beautiful, very mystical. And this priest was not just any priest, Monsignor Peter Dunn. You got to really hear the story about him and what an incredible force for the church that he was, devoted to the Blessed Mother. And he was just one of those Irish priests who he brought the faith to so many where we live, and started this apostolate. So it's a really, really great story. Now, at the same time that they started Maria Regina Clary, and I shouldn't say it was actually not even the apostolate that got started at that point. It was just praying for priests, and after a very mystical experience. And at the same time, my brother was being ordained. He was a brand new priest, and God was telling me how vital it is that I pray for him, not just occasionally, not just on Sundays or Thursdays, all the time. He literally told me he will need your prayers every single day. And so since he was ordained, that's what I have been doing, is praying for him. And it's really been amazing to have a brother who is a priest, because you do get a little bit of an insight about some of the things that they go through, some of the little things. For example, maybe not you, but you might have heard people in church who criticize Father for his homily, or that it went 1 minute over, or you know, that they would prefer that he would run the church a different way, or they want him to do this. How that actually really, really affects a priest. And I think that we tend to feel that, well, they must be close to God, so that probably is just water off a duck's back. And I can tell you that it is not. And we should be as concerned about the holiness and sanctity of our priests as they are of themselves. And that's one of the reasons why we need to pray for them, is because it's not that God can't act unless we pray, but he wants our participation. We are called to participate in that. And with the books that go around the world, we'll talk more about that when Vicki's on, but people have said they feel this really, really deep calling to pray for priests. And if you feel that, that means that yes, you indeed are called to pray for priests. There was a new study that came out, and National Catholic Register has it, about the priesthood right now. And they were sort of looking at how things had changed from a baseline study that was done a few years ago. And it found that young priests remain more conservative, but they really aren't necessarily left or right as we would think about it, conservative in terms of politics. Some other findings that were very, very interesting, but they're largely flourishing, but they don't think their communities are, at least not to the same degree that they are. And so that's us. We're the community. So I'm just wondering, you know, what's happening with us? And some other findings that, as I scroll down here, that they really love working with the lay people to bring about good things in the church, which is a great thing. That's another thing we're called to. And it does say here, younger priests are more likely to say they are expected to go above and beyond their vocational calling, and they're also lonelier than their older peers. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that they probably have so much work, they can't often be together with one another. And that's a very, very important thing for priests to be together. So we'll talk more about praying for priests here in just a few minutes. But at 5 minutes past the hour, it is time for news on EWTN. President Trump says he is cutting off trade negotiations with Canada. NBC's Alice Barr reports it's over an ad campaign that includes a clip of former President Ronald Reagan warning about the long-term risks of tariffs.
The president citing a statement from the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute accusing Ontario of using selective audio and video that misrepresents the 1987 address without asking permission to use and edit the remarks, noting the foundation is reviewing legal options.
Ontario Premier Doug Ford announced the ad campaign earlier this month. Trump said on Truth Social that tariffs are very important to the national security and economy of the U.S., accusing Canada of using the ad to interfere with a pending Supreme Court case regarding Trump's authority to impose sweeping tariffs. In August, Trump announced a 35% tariff on all Canadian goods, with some exempt because of a previous trade agreement. The Trump administration is turning up the pressure on Moscow to agree to a ceasefire with Ukraine. Charlotte North reports.
The U.S. has sanctioned Russia's two biggest oil companies, Rosneft and Lukoil, that help fund the Kremlin's war against Ukraine. This is the first direct intervention from the Trump administration against Russia over its invasion and follows a series of sudden shifts in U.S. policy over the past week that have kept everybody guessing.
President Trump has previously signaled he could impose penalties on Moscow for its continuation of the war. And in remarks from the Oval Office, he explained that he felt it was time to issue the sanctions. The United Kingdom also targeted the two oil companies last week, and the European Union has formally adopted another package of sanctions. North reports President Trump has been losing patience with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
After a phone call with Putin last week, peace talks in Budapest were on, then abruptly cancelled a few days later. The U.S. leader had a testy meeting with Ukrainian President Zelensky and refused to give Ukraine long-range missiles, instead suggesting Ukraine give up large amounts of territory to Russia.
North reports the sanctions come as Trump pushes for an end to the war in Ukraine.
President Trump may have finally gotten fed up with both leaders and is now playing hardball to pressure them to agree to peace.
History was made in the Sistine Chapel on Thursday as Pope Leo XIV and King Charles III prayed side by side, marking the first time since the Protestant Reformation that a reigning British monarch and a pope have prayed together during a royal state visit to the Vatican. Buckingham Palace said that the king's state visit, postponed earlier this year due to the poor health of Pope Francis, celebrates both the church's 2025 Jubilee year and the ecumenical work between the Church of England and the Catholic Church, reflecting the Jubilee year's theme of walking together as pilgrims of hope. A prominent Free Presbyterian minister from Northern Ireland, however, is not so happy with the visit. Reverend Kyle Paisley, the son of firebrand Democratic Unionist Party founder Ian Paisley, said after the king prayed with Pope Leo XIV in the Sistine Chapel that King Charles III has acted contrary to the oath made at his coronation and should now let someone else take his place, who is a true Protestant and who will take their vows seriously. At least half of U.S. states plan to cut off food assistance benefits on November 1st because of the government shutdown. In Pitt County, North Carolina, Economic Support Services Administrator Thomas Knight says officials are working with community groups to try to bridge the gap.
We are not saying that we can match what they currently receive, but we are trying to come up with a plan to make sure that households are not going without food.
Some 25 states are sending out notices to people on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, that the checks won't be coming next month, including California, Alabama, Arkansas, Hawaii, Indiana, Massachusetts, Mississippi, and New Jersey. In North Carolina, Deasia Hawkins, who uses SNAP benefits, says she's concerned about how some people might react if they lose their food assistance.
People are going to result into violence and also stealing, because how are they going to survive with feeding their families?
A new analysis reveals that the number of young people identifying as transgender has plunged in recent years. The findings suggest the rate among 18 to 22-year-olds has dropped by almost half from 2023 to 2024. The number of young adults identifying as non-binary saw a similar drop in just 1 year, going from roughly 5% to about 2%. While there is no single explanation for the shift, some believe that social and political factors could be at play, including a decline in acceptance. But individuals who have detransitioned told the Daily Mail, who reported on the study, that the new downward trends reflect a broader phenomenon. It's a social contagion, and we can see that reflected in the data, says Precia Mosley, who was born female. Mosley said high school trends have an uptick and a downtick according to what's in fashion. The only difference with this trend, she said, is that medical professionals got involved to make it permanent. Mosley, who began her transition to become male as a teen behind her parents' backs and underwent a double mastectomy at 18 years old, said social media also plays a role in encouraging people to change their gender identities. After the Palisades fire suspect pleaded not guilty on Thursday, his defense team said he's simply a scapegoat. Mark Mayfield has more.
Outside a federal court in Los Angeles, a lawyer for Jonathan Rinderneck said his client is not even accused of setting the Palisades fire. Steve Haney said the Florida man is accused of setting a different fire a week earlier that later became the Palisades fire. Haney believes that even if his client started the earlier fire, it was the L.A. Fire Department who failed to fully extinguish the embers. Investigators believe that that New Year's Day fire smoldered underground until it erupted as the Palisades fire on January 7th. I'm Mark Mayfield.
And in sports news, of a gambling ring has rocked the NBA. Portland Trailblazers head coach and Basketball Hall of Famer Chauncey Billups, Miami Heat guard Terry Rozier, and former NBA journeyman Damon Jones are among 34 people indicted in connection with two separate federal gambling investigations announced by the Eastern District of New York on Thursday. In bad news, if you are a coffee drinker, particularly at Starbucks, baristas at Starbucks may soon be going on strike, with a vote set to begin Friday, Michael Kastner reports.
Starbucks Workers United says a strike authorization vote will remain open for several days. The union says it's also planning a series of rallies and pickets over the weekend outside Starbucks locations in dozens of U.S. cities. Workers for the coffee chain are demanding more hours and higher take-home pay. Starbucks says it tried to negotiate with the union but claims it only represents about 4% of the workforce and yet still chose to walk away from the bargaining table. The company said if they're ready to come back, we're ready to talk. I'm Michael Kastner.
Oh, the pumpkin spice. Channeling, oh, the humanity, oh, the pumpkin spice. Well, that's news for you this morning. I guess all the, or at least some that's important. There's a lot more that's important. And coming up next, we are going to be talking to Vicki Harrout about Maria Regina Clary and the need to pray for priests. I hope that you'll be with us, because when we talk about, well, boy, am I called to pray for priests? I think there's a really easy way to figure out if you are called, and that's if you can hear my voice right now. We're all called to pray for priests. That is coming up next on Catholic Connection. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Catholic Connection. Teresa Tambio back on Monday. She's got a great show, too, so hope you have the opportunity to hear Catholic Connection then. Right now, we are talking with a good friend of mine, Vicki Harrout, who is Vice President of the Apostolate Maria Regina Clary, which is Mary Queen of the Clergy, about praying for priests. Welcome to Catholic Connection, my friend.
Oh, thank you, Sherry. Good to hear your voice and good to be with you.
Even though it's full of COVID, it's good to hear my voice.
Well, not that part, maybe.
Thanks. Well, at the beginning of this hour, I talked a little bit about just kind of teasing the fact that Monsignor Peter Dunn was one of the people that co-founded Maria Regina Clary. You were the other. and we all came together, you know, forming that apostolate. But I want to go back just for a few minutes and talk about Monsignor Peter Dunn. He was so special in the Archdiocese of Omaha,
where
we both live. I mean, he brought so many people to the faith. Can you just share a little bit about what made him so special?
I think it was just his holiness, Sherry. He just was a very holy priest. He was a priest to his very core. He loved it and lived it and loved people. He just loved people wherever he went. He loved the people, and love begets love. It just, people loved him because he loved them.
Yeah. And he just was loved wherever he went, and especially by priests. So many priests, when he was alive, Monsignor Peter Dunn, when he was alive, would come to him for counsel, spiritual direction, confession. Yeah. He was a priest.
And interestingly, even when I would take him places in the wheelchair, you know, years, like when he was in his last years and that, and his brother priest would just love to see him. He encouraged them just because they could see him, even when they didn't get a chance to talk to him. And there were priests that would just come up with tears in their eyes. They were so happy to see him. And he was just an encouragement to them, I think. And so it was just very beautiful.
Yeah, he was incredibly beautiful. So many stories that people can tell about him.
Goodness,
Yeah, and, you know, there was a particular mystical event that really convinced him that it was important to pray for priests who had passed on, for those who were in purgatory. Oh, can you tell us about that event?
Yeah, that happened probably in the very late 2005 or early 2006. He had been very, very ill, and we weren't quite sure that he was actually going to make it. But then eventually he started to improve, and one time that he'd been resting, and he woke up and told me that it wasn't a dream. He had an experience of having seen a number of priests. Some of them he seemed to recognize but couldn't name. But all of these priests, kind of a large crowd of them that gathered in his room, and they were all in purgatory. And he was just aware of their distress, and they seemed to be asking him to pray for them. And he was just so deeply moved by the experience. And at that time, he wasn't quite well enough, but within a week or so after that, he had improved to the point where he could celebrate Mass again. And I suggested that we do a novena of Masses for the priests in purgatory, and he said yes, and we started to do that. Then about 5 or 6 days into that novena, he had another experience where he saw some of them again, and they were just radiant and joyful and grateful for the prayers. And he assumed from that they had entered into the beatific vision and had made a home to heaven. And so it was that experience that just moved him so deeply. He never really ever forgot about it. And so that was kind of the beginning of our apostolate, the very beginning seeds of our apostolate.
So that moved me, too. I'm wiping away a few tears. So after that, you did the novena of Masses. What happened next? Because knowing Monsignor Peter Dunn, he doesn't forget things and says this was a one-time event. Okay, we're done praying for priests. It continued on.
No, that was not it at all. No, and at the same time, I have to just be honest, at the same time, I was experiencing a great deal of the Lord calling me in my own personal prayer life to pray for priests. And we started really talking about it and saying, what is the Lord asking of us? And so it being in like January or February of that year of 2006 at that time, and we says, well, let's call a group of people together, and on the Fridays of Lent, let's do a holy hour for priests.
And so we did that every Friday during Lent that year, and prayed for priests. And I was using some meditations and things that I found on the internet, and just had a nice, lovely group of people to pray. And when that Lent was over, then the group decided that they didn't want to end. They really, really were very moved by what they were doing, you know, in praying for priests. They knew it just felt right and good to be doing that. So we decided at that point that we would pray, have that holy hour every first Friday after that. And we're almost 20 years later, and we're still doing
That's a amazing.
First Friday holy yeah. hour for priests. So we've just continued it all this time. So, and then
and
as
the
time went on, we developed the prayers in the book and that.
Yeah. So. Yeah, yeah. Because I talked about this at the beginning of the show this hour, that at the same time my brother was being ordained and I was really being called to pray for him and for other priests. And we met through Catholic radio. You were the sacristan in the chapel of the Catholic radio station here in Omaha.
Right, right.
And, yep. you know, we just said, hey, well, and maybe we should start that apostolate. And now... You know, when we think about it, and by the way, it's Praying for Our Priests, that's plural, prayingforourpriests.org. The books came about, and they were a result of both you and Monsignor Dunn praying in front of Jesus in the Eucharist, and there are recordings of that. There's a rosary for priests. There's the Stations of the Cross and the Holy Hour. There's also prayers for vocations. And these books now have gone around the world several times in the last 20 years.
Yes, we have. And all over our country, many, 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 many people praying for priests using these books. And we're just so grateful for the work that the Lord is accomplishing through that. One of the things I wanted to mention, too, is especially praying for priests right now as we approach the month of November.
Right.
And the church dedicates the month of November to the holy souls in purgatory. And what a great time to pray for our priests, our especially those who were so beloved to us, to pray for them if they're in purgatory, then they will receive those prayers. Or to make a visit, you know, the first week in November, there's a plenary indulgence for visiting a cemetery, and one can go and pray for that priest in the cemeteries and gain a plenary indulgence for that priest. And so many lovely ways to do that. Or the Stations of the Cross.
Yeah.
Wonderful way to pray for priests.
All these different ways. I think it's important that as you listen right now to this conversation that we're having, that you just decide, I need to pray. Even if it's all you can think of right now is a Hail Mary for the priest who's celebrating your Mass at your parish this Sunday, start mm-hmm. with that. But it's so important for all
is.
Of us to pray, not just for priests who have passed on, but for our priests today.
Vicki,
we're running out of time, so I'm going to have to just go ahead and give the website here, prayingforourpriests.org. And thank you so much for being with us, Vicki, and thank you for
it was
serving.
A joy. Always a joy.
Always a joy.
Please, pray for
always
our priests.
Pray for our priests. It is a joy to pray for them, and you can start. Resources are available if you need them. PrayingForOurPriests.org. It's Catholic Connection, Sherry Brownrigg in for Teresa Tomeo. What a great interview we had with Vicki Harrout about praying for priests. Please say yes to that, by the way. And now we have Grace Stark with us. She's editor-in-chief and host of the Natural Woman podcast. And also the editor-in-chief, I think I may have said this, a magazine of fertility awareness and women's health, bouncing between lots of tabs on my computer. Grace, welcome to Catholic Connection.
It's so good to be here, Sherry. Thanks for having me on. I don't think I've ever spoken with you on Catholic Connection before, so this is exciting.
No, it's a first, and I'm really, really excited to talk about the subject today. And that's about Trump's IVF executive order, something that is causing concern from a lot of people. A lot of us just really don't know what to think. And I know that you have written about it and you've spoken about it. So let's just kind of dive right in. First of all, what was the actual executive order? What did it say?
Yeah, so it wasn't so much of an executive order. Back in, I think I talked to Teresa about doing a follow-up when Trump had kind of that an executive order surrounding IVF would be coming out. And this was 5-6 months ago that he'd originally announced something like that. And we're all kind of, all of us at Natural Womanhood, the organization that I'm the editor-in-chief for, and those of us who are working in the authentic women's health and restorative reproductive medicine space, we're all kind of holding our breath, wondering what that could possibly mean when Trump announced, President Trump announced there'd be an executive order on IVF. Because you may or may not remember, back on the campaign trail, he made some pretty big promises around IVF that he kind of hinted that there might be some kind of mandate about coverage. He had talked about wanting to make it more affordable. He even said some things about wanting to be known as the father of IVF or the king of IVF. He was very, very pro-IVF on the campaign trail. And so there were concerns about that, and we didn't really know where things were going to go. But instead of sitting on our hands and holding our breath and hoping for the best, a lot of us behind the scenes have been working really hard to get in touch with the administration and working with different organizations to let the Trump administration know that IVF is not the only, nor is it even the best way for couples to overcome infertility. And so what we heard from the administration last week was that our efforts have paid off. There is no mandate around IVF coverage. And they signaled in some of their languaging that they're going to open the door for more to be done in the restorative reproductive medicine health space, or RRM as we call it. And so just to give listeners an idea of where IVF versus restorative reproductive medicine differ, is that a lot of times you will end up with a baby going through either form of infertility care, but there's only one that will actually address why you're not getting pregnant, and that's restorative reproductive medicine for the large part. Whereas IVF works to circumvent issues with infertility, say you have endometriosis that's blocking your tubes and preventing the sperm from meeting the egg, or even from a new embryo from being able to travel through the tube into the uterus and implant. Whereas IVF will work around that just by creating an embryo in the lab and then implanting it in the uterus. Restorative reproductive medicine, or rather a medical professional trained in restorative reproductive medicine, will say, well, why were the tubes blocked in the first place? Why were they blocked, and what can we do to unblock them so that natural conception can take place? And that's just one example of kind of the interventions that RRM is capable of doing. And so it's a difference of philosophy where those who practice RRM say, you know, everything in the adult body is ordered towards procreation. And so if you're not able to procreate, if you are having regular sex, your body, that's the natural outcome of sex is pregnancy. So that signals there's something wrong, and we need to figure out why you're not getting pregnant. And so RRM does a really deep dive into that why, instead of just kind of working around it the way IVF does. And so we know that it's more effective. It actually ends up in healthier moms and babies and dads too, because there are interventions for husbands struggling with infertility. The outcomes are so much better from IVF. We have lower preterm birth, better birth weights, lower instances of multiples with RRM versus IVF. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that we're getting people healthier with RRM, and IVF doesn't get people healthier. You might end up with a baby on the other end of your IVF cycle, or multiple IVF cycles is usually the case. You might end up with a baby, but you're not going to end up healthier. And I think that's really critical for people to understand, is that we don't just want more babies. We want healthy babies, and we want healthy moms and dads to be able to take care of those babies. And IVF doesn't make people healthier. Oftentimes, people's health is actually worse off for having undergone IVF. And we see babies with outcomes that aren't great either. More instances of preterm birth, low birth weight, and all of the different follow-on effects that come from that with IVF. So we're not necessarily thrilled with what the administration came out with,
yeah.
But it's not as bad as it could be, because they didn't mandate IVF, and they're opening the door for more root, to put it in their terms, a more root cause approach to infertility. So that we're excited about, and we want to keep pushing the administration in that direction to look at the root cause of infertility for couples.
And of course, the Catholic Church is against IVF. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. But what when you say that they're opening the door, what are you reading into that? What do you think that they might do to make restorative efforts a little more front and center?
That's a really great question. They talked about needing to get to the root cause of infertility. And we know RFK is really big on that, right? The MAHA movement has been really critical in all of this. Just this idea that we need to do a deeper dive into metabolic syndrome. We need to do a deeper dive into everything around, diet and exercise and everything that's kind of going into our burden of disease. And so it was encouraging to hear him talk that way in particular during this White House announcement about approaches to infertility. And they're going to be creating an option for employers to offer plans similar to whether they can voluntarily offer vision or dental plans. Employers are going to be able to offer infertility coverage plans. An employer can choose, are they going to offer to help cover IVF? Are they going to offer to help cover restorative reproductive medicine? Or are they going to do both? Or are they going to do none of it? But there will now be an option, at least once the rules come down, for what these plans look like, for employers to offer some kind of coverage for infertility care. And they specifically called out root cause approaches in addition to IVF. So it was encouraging to see that that's being put on parallel offer at the very, very least.
Yeah.
So
that is really exciting to hear that. And we are talking with the wonderful Grace Emily Stark about the IVF information that came from Trump. We won't call that a mandate yet, but more of it's coming up. We've got a great conversation ahead. Stay with us. Welcome back to Catholic Connection. Having a great conversation with Grace Emily Stark about, it's not necessarily, well, an executive order, but President Donald J. Trump recently has announced actions to lower costs and expand access to in vitro fertilization and high quality fertility care. And, you know, while it's a wonderful thing to help families who are facing infertility, there are some problems with this. And Grace is here to talk about it. And Grace, this is something that the church believes, that IVF is a very grave sin. It's a very grave ill that we should not be doing as Catholics. Can you talk about what the church teaches and what's happening with this?
Sure. Well, the church teaches that every child has the right to be born of the fruit of the love and the marital act of a mother and a father. That children have that right. And to be creating children in a lab. There's all sorts of things that we introduce there, commodification of, or commoditization, however you want to put it, of human life. When money is exchanging hands to create life, we're always going to run into all sorts of problems, and it's going to cloud how we view those lives. And I think we see that with the fact that just millions and millions and millions of embryos are frozen on ice, some indefinitely all over the country. We don't know how to think about these lives. There's an understanding that, popularly speaking in our culture, there's an understanding that they have value. But it makes it hard for us to see them as individual, dignified human lives when money has exchanged hands to create them, and then they're just kind of left to sit on ice. But we know that people are devastated when we hear about things like there have been documented cases of freezers breaking down in IVF clinics, and those embryos dying and needing to be discarded. And people are devastated. They say, those were my children. And so we have all these really complicated feelings. And I think it's because of how those lives came into being in the first place, because it was done in a lab and money had to exchange hands for it to happen. And so it harms our ability to see each individual person as the dignified, unique image of God that they are. And so the church recognizes that and prohibits IVF for those reasons, not because the church doesn't love babies and doesn't want people to become parents and understands that those are good, wonderful feelings that people have to want to have babies. But the church also, in her wisdom, recognizes that babies are not a right, and we can't just do whatever we want to try to acquire biological children, that there are limits to what we can and should do. And she doesn't prohibit us from doing things that correct underlying causes of infertility. In fact, that's something the church is very much for, that we want our bodies to work well. We want to be healthy. And that's why the church promotes natural family planning, because NFP charts are actually a really fantastic diagnostic tool in the hands of a knowledgeable healthcare professional who can see from a woman's cycle charts what some of the underlying causes of her struggles with infertility might be. And so we call them, when we use NFP charts in that way, we call it a fertility awareness method or fertility awareness charts. And they're actually just, they really are such an incredible diagnostic tool that if you can take it to a doctor who's trained in, say, NAPRO technology or FEM or NEO or some of these other different versions of restorative reproductive medicine that are now available in the United States, if you can take your charts to them and work with them, and alongside, you know, doing targeted blood tests throughout your cycle, doing exploratory surgery if that's needed, doing different kinds of lifestyle interventions. If you can do that with your menstrual cycle charts via your fertility awareness or natural family planning method, these are all things the church really encourages, because it's helping us get more knowledge of our bodies. It's helping us appreciate the way our bodies function and get them working optimally so that we can conceive naturally, and so those children can be born and conceived from the love that their parents share in the marital act. And so that's where restorative reproductive medicine just really kind of, it blows IVF out of the water on all fronts, whether we're looking at the ethical concerns and theological concerns, but also just from the standpoint of what is medicine for? Medicine is to help correct things that are wrong, to help get to the root and to fix those things so that our bodies can function optimally. And that's what restorative reproductive medicine does.
Yeah, and I think that in today's culture, too, that, you know, we are so used to getting things quickly that we want. And really, you know, the natural family planning can take some time. And, yeah. And, you know, this is not an accusation towards any parents or would-be parents of just, you know, trying to do anything to have a child. But I think we do get kind of caught up in that. And it's really in just the, you know, commoditization of children. Like, I've got to have a child that no matter what it takes, I have to have a child. I myself am childless. And, you know, my husband and I have been married 33 years. It's no longer possible for us to have a child naturally. But, you know, it's one of those things that we struggled with for years and just had to come to grips that that was God's will. And, you know, he certainly has filled in all the other areas of gaps that I might say, oh, you know, that because I don't have children, this isn't happening. I'm not experiencing this. I have a very rich life, and, you know, it's all according to God's will. But I think that sometimes in our culture, we really do just get caught up in that. But this is not a good thing for several different reasons. And one of the things that we both know about is that there are so many fertilized eggs that become embryos that are created. Very few of them are implanted. And that causes a terrible issue, especially for us who are Catholics.
Yeah. And it was a really striking thing. President Trump doesn't seem to fully understand yet, and hopefully he'll move in a direction of understanding. But he seems to equate IVF with and promoting IVF and expanding IVF as being very, very pro-life. And he's not alone in that misconception. I think a lot of people have that perception that just because IVF is creating life, it has to be pro-life by definition. But really, when we look at the numbers, there are some estimates that the total number of live births that result, so babies born alive, that result from IVF, the estimates are as low that only about 2.3% of all the embryos created in the U.S. actually result in the live birth of a baby. And so what's happening to that other, you know, 98%? Well, they're either being created to be frozen indefinitely and possibly ultimately destroyed, or they're created and they're deemed not quality embryos, and so they're destroyed for that reason or donated for medical research. So it's, and this is another thing that a lot of people aren't aware of, but there's so much more destruction of life with the IVF process. It far outpaces the number of pregnancies, babies that are killed via abortion. There's more destruction of life in the IVF process even than abortion clinics in the United States. And so it's at an earlier stage, but, you know, life beginning at conception as it does, those are still human lives that are being ended, even if they're only 3, 4, 5 day old embryos in a petri dish that are discarded. And so I think that's a really important thing to point out to people, is that there, and I heard a restorative reproductive medicine physician explain it this way, that there's so much death in IVF for just a little bit of life. And we love the life that comes out of it. That life has value. People created via IVF have every bit as much dignity. And I guarantee that the vast majority of people who undergo the IVF process love those children so, so much. And so, you know, I don't want to make it sound like that people conceived via IVF have any less dignity or any less loved than anyone conceived any other way. But we do need to ask ourselves, when we're in the position of our government trying to expand access and make IVF less expensive, is that something that's right? Should we as a country be furthering access to something that, as that doctor put it, only gives us a little bit of life for a whole lot of death?
Wow, that's a heart-rending statement, and it's something that we all have to really take to heart and pray about and let others know about this. Do you think that the president is receptive to this message, to this understanding?
I can't speak to that because I don't know him personally, and I don't know his heart, but I have seen the evolution from what he was saying on the campaign trail, being so vocal, so full-throated in his support of IVF, to now this very, really pretty measured response to his promise. We know that for President Trump, you know, promises made, promises kept is a big thing for him. And so I think that he felt perhaps that he had to do something that would help increase access. And by taking this most favored nation approach to drug prices for IVF and decreasing some of the cost of some of the key fertility drugs used in the IVF process, he was able to say, look, I fulfilled that promise. It's going to be cheaper. And so it'll increase access. So I think that was important to him. But given that he was really kind of making it sound like earlier on that this was going to be some kind of executive order, some kind of mandate, to have really kind of pulled back on it does show, I think, that he's listening. And especially that root cause medicine was included in these proposed infertility benefit plans does show that he's listening, and he is aware that there are other options out there, and that this administration is going to do hopefully what it can to increase awareness and increase access to the restorative approach to infertility care. So I think he is amenable. I think he's shown that with this. And I think we just kind of have to keep praying that not only President Trump, but everybody who is very pro-IVF has their eyes opened to the fact that it's not the best that we have to offer for couples suffering from infertility, and it's not the best.
I was going to ask you where we go from here, but you said it. We need to pray, and we need to continue to educate people, you know, about that fact that that IVF is not the best that we have to offer. And Natural Womanhood podcast, how can people find that?
Yeah, so naturalwomanhood.org. Find us there. We're the online magazine of fertility awareness and women's health. You can find details about all of this and more on our website. We publish 3 brand new articles per week about some issue in women's health and infertility awareness. And then, subscribe to the Natural Womanhood podcast as well. Please, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for having me on, Sherry. I really enjoyed this conversation with you.
Grace Emily Stark. Yeah, she's women's health writer, editor, and speaker, fertility awareness, and all of it, the Natural Woman podcast. You can find it. And thank you so much, Grace, for being on with us. And thank you for leading the charge, changing hearts and minds about IVF. God bless. And we'll be back on Catholic Connection. It's Catholic Connection, Sherry Brownrigg with you just for a few more minutes. Wow, what a great show we had today. I hope you enjoyed it. Talked about the importance of Catholic education. Talked with Doug Keck today, all the great things happening at EWTN. And there's always, I mean, such a wealth of great content that you can find. So easy. And what I was talking about earlier, that the Lord told me that, you know, he's given me everything I need to grow closer to him. It's all there. Here in 2025, we have such an incredible list of riches, access to the sacraments at our great parishes, and we have all this content online. Just a reminder to make sure that it is good content. You know, if you go to EWTN, that it's always going to be good there. So there's always so much happening. And praying for priests, please do that. We just spoke with Grace Stark on the air, and she mentioned to me off the air that she is part of 7 Sisters in her parish, and I am as well, praying for our pastor on a particular day. And many people use those materials from Maria Regina Clary to pray the prayers for 7 Sisters. It doesn't really matter what you use. What matters is that you say, yep, I'm called to pray for priests. I'm Catholic, and that's really about all it is. So if you would like to pray for priests, please, please do that. And thanks for letting me host today. Teresa is coming up on Monday, and she's got a great show for you. A little bit about that. Gail Buckley Beringer will be there with the scripture verse of the week. Also talking about the martyrs and highlights from the journey home. Have a great weekend, and God bless you.